Hello, darkness, my old friend. You know who sang that song?
Who?
I think it was Simon and Garfunkel. It was made from, there's a movie that came out in like the late 60s, early 70s called The Graduate.
I do not know.
It's a fantastic movie. I highly recommend it. If you're having like a mini life crisis before or after finishing undergrad, watch that movie.
Damn.
But I think that song and then a few other songs were made for that movie.
I didn't know it was that old.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I don't think I am.
No.
And if it is, we'll take this out. But anyways, welcome back to another episode of Beaker Bros.
We're recording.
Bop, bop, beep, bada, bop.
Welcome back to another episode of Beaker Bros. I am Sonia.
And I'm Janudi.
Janudi, how are you?
As good as I can be. How are you?
I got a PSA. Also,
I got a pee.
I was like, oh. I already went. We're okay. Good. I have a PSA. But also, we have Rio over here.
Hey.
Yep, just a little ominous voice in the background.
Mm-hmm.
My PSA is this. I just drove through Armageddon. To anyone that drives on a highway during freak weather, totally understand it. I'm someone that just engaged in that. Sometimes it happens, sometimes we gotta go from point A to point B during times that are not ideal. But if you are amongst those people, let's try to drive better. That's all I gotta ask, that's all I gotta say. Do better.
Especially on the 407.
That was terrifying. I saw three accidents happen. The first accident, I saw this Ford F-150, typical, driving God knows how fast in like literal torrential snow. I saw that truck fly by. In my head, I was thinking, you know what? What are the odds they spin out? Knock on wood, like hoping it doesn't happen because that's scary. 15 minutes later, I saw that truck and pulled over, lights were flashing.
Oh my gosh.
So don't be dumb. Drive slow, drive safe. If you really got to get somewhere, leave early. I left early, I was still late for this episode. But all I got to say is be safe out there, do better, drive better. Am I a great driver? Debatable, but I try. Anywho, on to today's episode, the pertinent topic of the day. We're going to be talking about AI in academia.
Let's start off with, what is AI? To be fair, I tried to research this and try to understand what AI is, and for my brain, who's not really understanding this field, it was a little hard. But the definition you have was actually pretty good, right?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think so. Yeah. So this definition that we're taking or using for this episode, it's from a guy named Iqbal Sarkar. My apologies if I'm butchering their name. From Bangladesh. Hi there, if this is you. Oh, they have two affiliations, yeah. Excuse me. So from Melbourne, from Australia, and Bangladesh. Hello to you.
Why are you treating them like a Martian?
Hello from the great beyond. You know what? Bangladesh is pretty close to India. It's... What?
We're getting so sidetracked.
Like, geographically, they're not far. The word artificial intelligence has... It's quite a broad definition. It encompasses many things. Keep it together. I'll read verbatim what this individual
from Bangladesh
and Australia, multiple affiliations. Artificial intelligence, aka AI, as we'll be commonly referring to it in this episode, and you may see in literature as well, and other YouTube videos and podcasts, is a broad field of computer science concerned with building smart machines capable of performing tasks that typically require human intelligence. In other words, we can say that it aims to make computers smart and intelligent by giving them the ability to think and learn using computer programs or machines. So, for example, can think and function in the same way that people do. So it's essentially saying that using the information provided through various programs, from if we want to think about ChatGPT, using the information that's broadly available on, you know, the online, through the World Wide Web, as some may refer it to, they can just use the information that's currently available to create an output that benefits I guess, humans for their specific requirements.
I think what's really cool to also, like, note is the fact, the evolution in AI, how it began as learning simple rules, but now it's kind of been programmed to understand even more complex patterns by just looking at lots of data. So I think that's also really important.
I'm going to make a slight side comment here, but that's a really, like, important comment that you said there. But no, sorry, did I?
Go ahead.
Did you ever watch the show Simple Rules growing up?
Seven Simple Rules? No.
I don't remember what it was, I just remember Simple Rules. It's like about a kid in high school, I think, and she's learning simple rules to...
Eight Simple Rules?
Eight Simple Rules. That makes sense.
Anyways.
That just reminded me, I haven't heard simple rules in a sentence in a long time. So that's sort of like a broad definition of what AI is, and it's... applications within like a human context. But Janini, what about in academia? How have you personally used AI in, let's say, schooling or I guess your learning?
I think it's important to acknowledge AI in the use of like research.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think one example that I use AI in maybe like an everyday life too is things as like even creating this podcast outline today, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of putting into ChatGPT or whatever AI form there is and being like, hey, this is kind of the setting of the podcast. This is kind of the topic I wanted to talk about. Can you help me curate different outlines for the podcast? So I think that's one way that I use it more in an everyday instance. Mm-hmm. In terms of research, I haven't really gotten into it of using AI, I would say. Because the ways that, like, the examples that I've discovered AI being used right now is a bit more complex than the way that I would use AI in my research, because the research itself is different. But yeah, that's just kind of my perspective. What about you?
It's insane. Thinking back to, like, the first couple years of university, how, you know, ChatGPT wasn't really available, or, like, high school, whatever. ChatGPT is probably used on a bi-weekly, like every other day, or if not every day, in mm-hmm. like my work, in school, whether it's like doing a mini literature review. I've used it before to I use R for some of my work, which is an analysis coding program, and there are certain like functions and analysis methods that I didn't know how to perform on R. So I put what I needed to do into ChatGPT and gave it very specific instructions, and then it gave me the output for how to perform the function that I needed to on R. And you can use it for literally anything, like R. I've used it for Stata before as well. SPSS is like more automated, kind of like Excel, but like it still gave me the instructions on how to perform specific analyses. So it's saying that I use it for like analyses and how to like perform those. I use it for, again, literature reviews. It's for making this episode, learning.
Yeah.
Sometimes my students too will ask me questions in the courses that I TA.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I don't have an answer. So I say, you know what, that's a good question. Let me share it with the class. I'll post an answer for you on Teams. The reason why I say that is because I don't have an answer, but I look it up on ChatGPT. And they're able to help me out.
Sometimes I use ChatGPT or AI to help me like write emails or even like conversations, because I'm like, okay, this is what I want to say, but how do I change the tone, or how do I make it more professional, or how do I kind of also, whatever information I have, how do I change the language for a specific audience?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, and I think that's me using it maybe like in academia, but in a sense of not research, but more science communication and knowledge translation aspect of academia.
Mm-hmm. But in saying that, that also brings up or highlights an important point about, like, plagiarism.
Yeah.
And balancing, like, yes, we're using these platforms to, like, better our learning and help cater or improve our understanding of different topics, but it's not, like, the end-all, be-all of where we're getting our information from.
No, yeah, I agree. Even, like, for today's episode, I researched AI. I was trying to understand a bunch of topics and a bunch of, like, terms and whatnot, and I was trying to read it and understand, but I put it into ChatGPT and I was like, can you explain this for a lay audience? Like, mm-hmm. how would you explain it to a lay audience? And like me reading that gave me a better understanding, so I can kind of incorporate that into my own words and be able to explain it better, if that makes sense. So that's kind of me using it for the science communication aspect, I would say. So it's also being careful of like not using it word for word, but being like, okay, this is me understanding what I know. Okay, what they're trying to explain, let's put it together. Okay, now I have a better understanding of it.
Rio, I'm gonna throw it to you for a quick second. What's your stance then? Well, you're on the verge of becoming a teacher and working specifically with high school students.
Mm-hmm.
Physics?
Yeah.
Right?
Science.
Science in general? So, like, how, I don't know, like, as you enter the profession, and inevitably it's gonna be a part of, like, the way that you teach, probably, but also the way that your students learn, like, where do you see it playing a role in your life?
I think a lot of the things teachers struggle doing is being able to break down concepts in, like, an understandable series of sentences.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to put scientific concepts that are hard to understand and to put in chat and say, dumb down,
mm-hmm.
or, like, help me understand this at a XYZ level,
mm-hmm.
and then chat's able to do that. I think telling students to, like, try doing that when it comes to learning the concepts that they're learning in class. Another thing is being aware of discussion posts and making sure you don't have discussion posts that can easily be copied and pasted onto chat.
Yeah.
I find a lot of teachers right now are doing that, where it's so easy to just take the question and not put any input into
mm-hmm.
it on chat, and chat mm-hmm. can answer it already. Last thing is, like, we've all heard of Grammarly, and
yeah.
I mean, I use Grammarly.
So do I.
But like, what I learned recently is chat is way better at Grammarly than what Grammarly is currently doing. If you have, like, a paragraph or a sentence that you have, and you just say, what am I missing here? Or
mm-hmm.
enhance the flow and clarity, or cut down the words so it reaches a certain amount. It's good at, like, removing clutter and adding grammatical corrections. So I think also introducing that to your to my students might be beneficial as well. I already have a professor that's already telling us to use chat right now
mm-hmm.
when in our work, and make sure to do it in our writing so it sounds cohesive and flows well.
I saw a thing where a student had done, or had just used Grammarly just for her paper, I believe at, like, a university level or whatnot, but she was actually accused of plagiarism for using Grammarly or some whatnot, because
I heard that too.
It's like an AI and you're not supposed to use that, but even though she was using it for, like, grammar aspects of it. So what do you guys think about that? Like, what is your stance when you hear that?
I don't know. I think there's ethics when it comes to who is reviewing your work. Like, at a high school level, teachers encourage you to get other students to peer review your work, right? But do you add them to the citation
mm-hmm.
at the end when you're submitting your essay?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it would make sense if you said, chat reviewed my work at the end of your reference, but I don't know if that's going to be something that is required in the future.
Yeah, because, I mean, in high school, when we had, like, our English papers and whatnot, we were like, hey, can you edit this,
mm-hmm.
right, for grammar or whatnot? You don't really be like, oh, this person edited it, right? So if you use Grammarly and now you're being accused of plagiarism for, like, a spell check or whatnot,
mm-hmm.
how it's kind of like, okay, so should we be citing that we used such sources for that? Even if it's not for the actual content and quality of a paper, but for the just, like, spell check and grammar. Because, I mean, Microsoft Word or whatnot has spell check,
mm-hmm.
right? At what point do we say, okay, this is plagiarism, this is not plagiarism? We're using our resources versus not using our resources.
I think it depends to, like, what extent you use ChatGPT. So, for example, like, within research already, like, when you're publishing in a peer-reviewed journal, like, you don't give credit to the peer reviewers who review your work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, like, an unspoken, not even unspoken, it's just, like, the way it is. Like, they review your work, and if it's good enough, then it gets posted. So,
yeah.
Or published. Like, so in that capacity, there isn't really a need to give credit, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends to, like, what extent ChatGPT is informing your ideas. I think that's where, like, the better legislation or rules or policies within journals and schools need to be established.
I think it's still something relatively new to, like, AI in academia. Like, of course, like, a year ago we did an episode of AI,
mm-hmm.
and a year later it's advanced so much more
mm-hmm.
than it was,
like,
a year ago.
Like, the information we gave in that episode, I was listening back to it, like, it's out of date. Like,
yeah.
It's a lot of it's not, like, relevant.
Yeah, and it's
yeah.
just within a year, right? So it's also such a evolving field. Like, every week there's something new, there's a new app, there's this, there's so many AI resources now that can be used in academia that I think institutions are also navigating how to establish, okay, you can do this, but you can't do this. I've even seen certain policies where if the professor says it's okay to use ChatGPT, then it's not considered plagiarism. Or they actually are telling students to use ChatGPT for certain assignments. So I think it's really interesting to see how institutions or even academia and the field of research kind of navigates that.
Yeah. I have a question again for you, Rio. So in like the creation of questions for, you know, assignments that you're working on, how do you make it so that it's not easily susceptible to giving answers on ChatGPT?
Usually if you get the students to reference their work to a desired reading that you give them,
mm-hmm.
or text, just getting them to cite a specific example in the text would require more work for them to answer the question than just putting the question alone in chat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
For a course that I TA last semester, it's a course on statistics and epi, and the prof, Russ, like he was, or me, or like all the TAs and him were trying to think of questions for like final assignment work that weren't susceptible to being posted on, or to being plagiarized on ChatGPT, and we could not for the life of us figure out a way to make it so that there was no way that anyone could cheat. So what we ended up doing was we did that. We made students reference specific readings, and one thing that we did consider doing was placing a time limit on the students' ability to answer the question. But then we thought against that because it just limited students' ability to go over their work and think of their ideas and all that sort of stuff, which in the end could make the work that they're doing more susceptible to being plagiarized, because if they're low on time, it's like, oh, let me just go on ChatGPT and let it figure it out for me, because I only have 45 minutes left to answer a 5-page essay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that needs to be developed a little bit more. But
yeah, no, yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. And then what else do you have over here?
Oh, there's just like examples of AI in research. In a sense of, so I have one example of basically using AI to understand climate change. So scientists trying to understand how our planet's climate is changing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it.
Thanks. So they're collecting a bunch of data from satellites, weather stations, and other sources. But when they collect these data, then the algorithms analyze the data to identify trends and patterns, which help the scientists and researchers predict future climate conditions and assess the impact of human activities on the environment. For example, AI can analyze satellite images to track changes in ice caps or monitor deforestation in remote areas.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually really cool. Sorry, and another example is using AI to actually track disease outbreaks, which is really fascinating. So essentially, disease outbreaks like COVID-19, scientists can actually gather data from hospitals, clinics, and public health agencies about the number of cases, locations, and demographics. And then the algorithms can actually process the data in real time, detecting clusters of infections, predicting hotspots, and guiding public health interventions. So AI can analyze social media posts and news articles to identify early signs of disease outbreaks and alert health authorities to essentially take preventative measures for that.
Slay.
It's actually very fascinating.
So slay.
Any examples that you know or any applications that you were aware of?
Oh, I think there's literally any area of research can lend itself to being benefited by AI.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of companies right now, there's a lot of companies right now that are trying to figure out ways to use AI to write systematic reviews and just like literature reviews and make it very discipline specific. So I know there's, you know who Mo Bhandari is? He's a big guy at Mac for orthopedics and orthopedic surgery, and like he's one of the biggest researchers and most cited researchers in the world in that area.
Oh.
So right now he has a company called Ortho Evidence, and he's trying to create this like program or software or whatever it is where it can spit out systematic reviews a lot quicker using AI.
Okay.
So it's like giving the AI the tools to perform systematic reviews and meta-analyses,
yeah,
and using like the repository of evidence that he has available through Ortho Evidence and
mm-hmm.
other journals that currently exist and other database publications that exist.
Yeah.
And to perform in systematic reviews,
mm-hmm.
which can sometimes take like a few months to a year to write, but with AI it could take, I don't know, like probably like a day or two or a week.
So would it essentially be writing the manuscript and doing the whole process itself, like AI?
No, I don't know to what extent, because
yeah.
I'm not involved with his work, and
yeah.
I don't know to what extent. I
yeah.
just know that someone that I know, their friend works for Ortho Evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm, like, mistaken in saying this, but I think their goal was to have, like, a systematic review come out each week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, like, just speeding up. And a lot
yeah.
of other companies are doing this right now as well, so it's sort of, like, within the world of research methods, it's,
yeah.
like, a race to who can develop the most effective and robust platform for performing
mm-hmm.
these searches. 'Cause,
mm-hmm.
like, within evidence-based medicine,
yeah.
systematic reviews and the synthesis of existing evidence is, like, the very top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
Like, it's the thing that we call the pinnacle of research. So if you're able to output, like, a bunch of reviews very quickly, that could inform evidence-based
yeah.
medicine very quickly.
I'm
just trying to practice.
I'm like, there's clear advantages to it, but I'm thinking of, like, the disadvantages of that.
Well, do you have a couple that you want to talk about?
No, I'm just, like, actually thinking about, like, the specific example of there's any disadvantages. Nothing that's come to mind. Like, the only, I guess, disadvantages I could think of AIs, kind of straying away from that example, but just, like, ethical concerns where, I mean, like we said, AI is essentially the information that we feed it,
mm-hmm.
right? And humans itself have inherent biases, and we are basically feeding it also our biases to these algorithms. And so when they are spewing out whatever information that we are seeking, they also might be spewing out the biases that, you know, we have.
Yeah, it can promote systemic racism in the work that it outputs. There's a couple of examples of that actually happening with, I remember there was, I think it was on Twitter or X, whatever the heck it's called now, there was, Microsoft had an AI program that was like outputting its tweets, but then its tweets ended up becoming very, I thought I heard something. Anyways, the tweets that it was producing ended up being, like, very racist. Because
oh.
it was drawing from information that was currently on Twitter.
Yeah.
And things that people were posting about it and interacting with. So
oh.
then the tweets that were coming from it ended up being, like, loaded with racism. Like,
oh,
I mean,
wow. Rio, you were also saying an example earlier before we started this podcast about Canva. What
yeah.
was it?
One of my professors asked us to look at the biases that AI generators, image AI generators have. And one of them was, one of the platforms I looked at was Canva. And
mm-hmm.
for example, when I searched up produce an image that shows us scientists, it was typically white men. So, you know, there was definitely a lack of diversity. Yeah, just contributing to the systemic racism that is really in artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. To add to that example, just to give a little bit, sorry, were you done your thought?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, cool. I feel like my brain is every which way, but for the Microsoft example, I found an article that spoke about it from 2016, and it's titled, "Twitter taught Microsoft's AI chatbot to be a racist asshole in less than a day." So it went from, well, I'm not going to say some of these tweets because they're just horrible, but, like, it went from being, like, the Microsoft chatbot, it was called Tay Tweets, or is called Tay Tweets, I'm not sure if it's still called that, but it went from saying, like, hi, nice to meet you, humans are cool, to saying some, like, pretty...
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to say that on the...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so it's just, we'll cite the article in our references, but that's nuts. Anywho, but just to, I guess, wrap up this episode, where do you guys see, then, AI going within the next, 10 years to and how it could benefit within like an, or students within an academic context or even researchers.
I think what you kind of mentioned too, right, how they are using AI to essentially create systematic review.
Uh-huh.
And they're using that to do that in a research like field.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see how that would work in an institution, like academia field of like students using it, right? Because there is that sense of plagiarism or not if you were to do that. So I'm curious to see how that would actually evolve in like assignments.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Rio, you got any thoughts on that?
With the continued developments and evolution of AI, I feel like there's going to be like a continuous use of or release of carbon emissions and just continuous, that's what I'm looking for.
Like the environmental degradation, like the impact that it could have?
Basically. So like, I don't know, we're so aware of climate change right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know if like activists are going to say like we need to put a halt on AI for a bit or like find a more eco-friendly ways to
like
use AI.
A sustainable.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know, that's something I keep thinking about, because like we're moving towards a lot of like eco-friendly uses of products and equipment, but like when it comes to AI, I feel like we keep overlooking the idea of climate change and its impact.
That's such a good point. Like quantum computing, for example, that's like the next, or the next stage of like computer development. And that just uses so much energy. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, figuring out more sustainable ways of, computer science and AI and everything like that, that's super important. And I guess for me, I don't know, just, like, embracing it more. Like, teachers that, for lack of better words, try to shun it and say, like, think for yourself. Obviously, like, students need to think for themselves, but I don't know, if it could leverage your learning and create the opportunities for learning, like, why not embrace it and just teach students more effective ways of utilizing it?
Yeah.
But that's it for today's episode.
Thank you for listening, as always.
Drive safe.
Bye.